Good evening, this is Mark Lynch and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Amanda Vail, writer and journalist on arts and culture, and we're continuing our talk about her new book. We had to do part two. She edited and wrote the commentary for Jerome Robbins by himself, selections from his letters, journals, drawings, photographs, and an unfinished memoir. Whew. There is so much in this book, Amanda. We had to do part two. We had to, because there were things I wanted to talk about.
I'm delighted.
One of them from his early life. First of all, I love this when I interview artists. You'll often find out that they started out studying one thing and then something happened and they totally switched. He started out studying chemistry at New York University. Because it was a useful degree.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, he actually wanted to study journalism, which is kind of heartbreaking because you realize, in fact, he is a good journalist.
He
always wanted to be a writer.
That's right.
And he has a great eye and a great ear, and he does report things really well, as you find out when you read letters that he writes about things later on in his life. But his father thought this was not useful, and his father owned and was the principal actor in a company called the Comfort Corset Company, one of the better names ever. I mean, it's like from our own business directory. Robbins just was never, ever, ever going to go and work in the Comfort Corset Company. This was not something he didn't want to be a garmento, and he particularly didn't want to be an underwear garmento. And so he wanted to go to college, and he had a get, but his father said, you have to have a useful degree. So, of course, he flunked chemistry.
This is the part I can't imagine. And the funny thing is, several things happened to sort of, thankfully, redirect him. One of them is that he worked at the Pennsylvania resort Camp Tamament.
Yeah.
Now, and his quote was, I learned so much at that. Now, you have to talk about why. I mean, the people who were there were incredible.
Well, Tamament was one of those kind of, I guess it's a product of its time and place. It was a sort of left-wing summer resort for people that didn't have money but wanted to get out of the city. It was kind of like, I don't know, a singles house multiplied by many, many, many things in some affordable shore community, only this was in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And they had a entertainment staff that would put on entertainment. Actually, if you've watched The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel,
yes.
There's a scene set, there are several scenes set in a summer resort. Actually, it's meant to be Grossinger's the Concord up in the Catskills. And Tamament was like that, but not quite so posh. And it was the lower rung of that kind of thing. And they had entertainment directors who would put on shows. Every week there was a Broadway-style review. And the people who worked there were...
amazing.
Imogene Coca.
He fell in love with Imogene Coca.
Carol Channing.
Oh, my God.
Later in life, Neil Simon got his cut his teeth there. So you can see what it was. It was a real kind of a boot camp for people who were going to make their way in musical theater, in the entertainment world of the 1940s and 50s and 60s. And Robbins was there as a dancer first. Then he started choreographing and putting together sort of sketches. And it was a formative, formative place for him. And he wrote very amusingly about it, too.
Now, he eventually joined ballet theater. There's a great piece of his about auditions, writing auditions. He describes auditions like a rescue ship.
Yep.
He obviously finds out what he really wants to do by his joining the ballet theater. But what I want to talk is about Fancy Free. Talk to me about that, because there's an incredible description of the notes he has for that in the book, which is just sort of basically outlining the whole piece. What was Fancy Free originally? Was a dance?
Well, what had happened was Robbins was he was so ambitious, and which you can tell. I included a number of letters of his that are kind of the sort of things that you would probably, if it was him, he would say, "Oh, could you burn that, not put it in here." But there are things that show him with this kind of bumptious, foot in the door arrogance, and he's trying to push himself, you know, as a young kid, and he has all this ambition. So he pushes himself into ballet theater, and then he pushes himself into being a choreographer. He wants to be a choreographer because he can make his own dances and, you know, do what he wants to do. And he had these grandiose ideas for things with casts of thousands, and they were just unbelievably complicated, and nobody would say, yeah, sure, you can do that. No, are you crazy? I mean, really? He was a kid. They weren't going to do it. But somebody said to him, make it simple. And what he did was to pare this whole ambition thing down. He came up with an idea for three sailors on shore leave who meet three girls in a bar, not all together, two and then one, and everything goes screwy, and it's a little screwball comedy, and it's, you know, 15 minutes, and it's over. And as it turned out, there was an opening in the schedule, a new ballet that Ballet Theater was expecting did not materialize, and they said, yeah, okay, kid, let's let the kid do it. So he did, and then he said, I want this guy to that you've never heard of to compose the music for it. His name is Leonard Bernstein, and nobody had ever heard of Leonard Bernstein, who was exactly Robinson's age. They were both 25. And they got together and put this ballet together. Part of it long distance, which is kind of wonderful because you get to see there's some letters between them.
Oh, there's great letters.
And you can see the ballet beginning to take shape. And Robbins writes about it in little snippets in his diary. But the thing that he did that was so incredible and which you're, I think, commenting on is that he outlined the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
As a matter of fact,
you didn't even reprint the whole thing because it would have taken forever.
No. I couldn't. I mean, it would have been the whole book.
Right. But he detailed every aspect of it.
Including the sound, you know, what kind of music. He
right.
practically put in how many bars and practically, you know, wrote notes in. And, you know, I keep thinking that must have been both infuriating and helpful for Bernstein because he's got this guy saying, okay, I want this mood here and it should be really bluesy and this one should be really peppy and this should be this. But he outlined everything for him and actually, that set the model for the way their relationship as collaborators went for almost the rest of their life. What would happen is that Robbins would say, I want this. And then Bernstein would say, yeah, and then it can do this. And then he would catch fire and run off with it. And then Robbins would come and stand behind him at the piano. And Bernstein once said, I remember my whole career with Robbins is my memory of me sitting at the piano with his hands on my shoulders. And Robbins' memory of Bernstein is him just playing the piano and running off with things. And you can just see that the two of them had an amazing...
Well, that's one of the great things about this book and the way that you've done it is that you track their relationship through the decades. I mean, they just every once in a while they're communicating with each other and over different projects, and it's amazing to follow that relationship. Now, Fancy Free eventually becomes the movie on the town.
And before it was the movie, it was the Broadway show.
That's right.
And in fact, all of this in Fancy Free the ballet premiered in May of 1944. In December of 1944. On the Town, the musical, based on it, Three More Sailors, Three Girls, Whole Nine Yards, but with a book written by Betty Comden and Adolph Green, premiered and made huge double success stories for Robbins and Bernstein. They were, at this point, you know, the wunderkinder, both of the ballet and of Broadway, and it was an amazing step for both of them. And Robbins said, you know, I can't get used to the idea that I'm supposed to be somebody.
Huh. Now, it eventually becomes On the Town. And he becomes famous, not just in ballet, but in Broadway and then in film. But it's interesting. He does write about thoughts on choreography and talks about also in other pieces. He talks about the difference between working in ballet and working on film and working on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
And Thoughts on Choreography, which is in the book written March 1954, he says, I can't sit and direct a ballet. In creating a ballet, I say what I have to say in the way that I feel it. And they're really great, notes that he writes about in your book that are really give you an idea of how he envisioned what he does.
Which is extraordinary because, in actual fact, when I first started trying to find accounts of how he created things, they were hard to find because, of course, you know, when he's creating, he's not writing. But a lot of the time he would just jot something down and it would be so clear what was going on in his head. And there's a wonderful passage late-ish in the book, where he's having trouble with the choreography of the Goldberg Variations, a ballet that he did to Bach. And there's this one variation that was, I think, maybe 50 seconds long, and he just could not get a grip on it. He's banging his head on it, and he's saying, I can't, and he's writing about this and saying, I had such a bad time in rehearsal. And then I went home, and I tried it this way, and it all worked, and I realized the problem was I'd forgotten the relationships between the two people in the dance.
Oh, my God.
And what was just so sort of electrifying to me was that that is what you see. That is what distinguishes Robin's choreography. I think all of it, not just his choreography for the Broadway stage where you would expect it, but in the ballet where, for him, always the human element, in the most abstract ballet, the human element is still there, and it's always really important. And how there is a relationship between this person and that person on stage is so important to him.
Now, I want to talk about, first of all, he worked on so many other, and he would sort of help, if he didn't direct it, if he didn't write it, he would help it out. But he created dances for a lot of early shows, like Billion Dollar Baby, High Button Shoes, Miss Liberty, Call Me Madam. The list is incredible. You know, it's just amazing. But he has another interesting note called Ballet Puts on Dungarees. It's October 14th, 1945. And he talks about how amazed he was that ballet, as he's learned, has been welcome across the states. That people, no matter where he went, ballet was appreciated. And he also talks about people in film doing more sophisticated dances. And he mentions people like Gene Kelly and Jack Cole. And when I go through this book, it's reading stuff like that that just is amazing to read what he personally thought about what he was doing.
Well, he was always so aware of what other people were doing in his field, and not just in his field, in other things as well. But there's that early appreciation for Kelly and for Cole, who was, you know, great genius of film choreography. And later on, you know, he's fascinated by Twyla Tharp when she comes into being in the, you know, she's in the 70s when she's starting to be noticed and be seen. And he goes to see her work in Brooklyn and at Judson Church. And he's, you know, he's really aware of all of this stuff. He's trying to be on top of it. It's, he's such a sponge, really, for artistic expression of almost any kind. And also, I'm such an avid reader. That's the other thing that was so fascinating to me was all the book lists that he has. And he
would read things that you wouldn't. He read an entire book about animal migration, for instance.
Yeah.
And then he decided, like, is there any way that I could turn this into something? And nothing ever came out of it.
Well, I love that. Could you make a ballet of the Great Migrations? I don't know. Would they all be wearing animal outfits?
I don't know. I bet that would have worked. There's also great notes about flopping. That's the ticket, which he directed, was a bad flop. And I love the way he writes about it. I was numb and relieved both.
Yeah. I love that. It's just that nothing that he did when he first started had any kind of success. It was like he had a flop first and then he was successful. And he was quite honest about it.
He also wrote Laurence Olivier.
And, yes.
That was sort of an interesting exchange of letters.
Well, he wanted to do – what's so interesting is that the National Theatre in England was looking to hire exciting directors. And Robbins, at this point, was not just a great choreographer, but he was a great theater director. And people were – you know, he'd been doing – all of these things, including Fiddler, and he had directed Mother Courage, which is not a musical, and he was really at the top of his game. And the National Theatre of Great Britain, with Laurence Olivier and Kenneth Tynan and John Dexter, came to him and they wanted him to do whatever he wanted. And he wanted to do the Bacchae, this
right.
blood-soaked tragedy by Euripides with maybe masks. He wasn't sure. He was really interested in this. And they had conversations about this that went on over a period of about 3 years. And the production never came off, largely because, Robbins kept taking up his time and he never could commit to it. And then the theater, couldn't commit to him not committing. And I always wonder, what would have happened if he had done that? It sounded so tempting.
There were so many projects that nothing ever comes out of, like the Migration project, that you really wonder what he could have done with. Now, I'm gonna wind this up shortly, but I want to talk about, he had emotional challenges off and on throughout his life. And there's a journal entry, journal number 13, that begins, like, guess where I'm writing from? And it's near Boston. It's not Nantucket. I'm in McLean's.
And he had been hospitalized for depression and
right.
suicidal tendencies in 1975 when he wrote this. And this is a part of, actually, a lot of this anxiety and depression, this breaking point, came about because of his reading that book, The Ordeal of Civility,
yep.
about the plight of assimilated Jews, and his feelings in a way that he'd had to suborn so much of his own identity in trying to fit in and be successful in the sort of terms of American culture and society. And in 1975, all these feelings just burst open in him, and he was hospitalized at McLean's. And the stuff that he writes about in the journal, his description of his time there,
it's amazing.
Is so amazingly moving and candid, and sort of a little tiny bit of cuckoo's nest right there. It's quite something.
What's very poignant is when he turned 60 years old and his writing after that. A lot of his friends are now dead. The AIDS epidemic at one point is going on and is taking a lot of people he knows. And there's his writing becomes very poignant. I mean, he knows he's getting old, and again, he misses people. It's an interesting time for him.
Yeah, there's a terrible, really, period of a few years where he lost so many people that had been close to him. His one-time lover, Jesse Gerstein, died. His longtime assistant and secretary, Edith Weissman, died. Balanchine was sick and dying. Bernstein died. It was very hard for him. And, you can see the toll that it takes, and in not just in his journals, but in his letters, and you really feel for it.
But again, it ends with that great note to himself on January 2nd. We're going to have to end it right there. My guest tonight has been Amanda Vail, writer and journalist on arts and culture. We've been talking about her new book that we could talk about for years. She edited and wrote the commentary for Jerome Robbins by himself, selections from his letters, journals, drawings, photographs, and an unfinished memoir. You have to pick up the book. A lot of stuff is in there. Amanda, it's been a real pleasure.
It has been a huge pleasure for me. Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.